opening, Ted, and thank you for the good singing. Topic this morning, the Christian through the phases of life. See where that takes us. I'd like to start out with this picture. And you wonder where this is coming from, but well, in our season of life, Vicky and I have really enjoyed cycling tours lately. It's been something we've really enjoyed doing together. But when we're cycling, there are some challenges to that, and one of the challenges is gravity. It is awfully hard to go up the hills. The other challenge is wind. It's nice when it's behind you, but not so good when it's in your face. But so when we were cycling this fall, we were going up this pretty steep hill, and we were going to make it, but we didn't quite have the stamina to quite stop it. So we thought we'd just look around. It was a way to take a rest. But when we stopped and we saw this sort of interesting barn just off to the side where we were on our hill, and we took a picture of that, and it's sort of like a memory of that tour. You see the barn, but you don't see the hill. And anyway, the hill had some purpose for us. Anyway, we got to see and enjoy it. So this picture was taken at that spot. So just talking about how we enjoy cycling, it's sort of something we love to do together in this phase of life. When you're talking about the phases of life, you might ask, well, what are they? How many are there? And what should we talk about? And the usual metaphor is the calendar, the seasons that we have here, right? We're supposed to have four seasons. Anyway, there's a representative of some of them. But really we kind of forget about some of the seasons here. We kind of have like two seasons, I think, sometimes. I think the old adage is there's 8 months of winter and 4 months of bad skiing or something like that. That's how it goes. Well, here's an old picture taken of a colleague of mine who's deceased now. This is Dr. Bill Boyd, that I worked with for quite a number of years. He only had two seasons in his calendar. He had floats on and floats off. That was all that he had in his life. So come May, he was anxious to get out there and get his aircraft to the place where they would fit him with floats. And then come October, it was a big worry to get them back to the place where they'd put on his wheel skis, the floats so he could land on all these lakes in the summer, and the wheel skis so he could land on all the lakes in the winter. But he really enjoyed it. But that was his two seasons. So in his life, there were sort of these two seasons. And it makes me think of this, for the mathematicians out in the audience who know that y equals sine x, that's the curve that you get when you plot that on, and it goes up and down and up and down and over and over and over and over again. And you have the high points, and then you have the low points, and you have the high points and low points. Now this is, you could say, summer, winter, whatever. This is long days, short days. Anyway, it all matches out pretty well. So in that sense, we have these recurring ups and downs. And to me, that's a bit like the path of life that we sometimes see. When we did that tour in the fall around Lake Omic, just west of South River, somewhere in that area, we went 42 kilometers, and I think there were 42 hills on it like that. It was a pretty intensive ride up and down and up and down. But I thought that talking about two phases of life might be more applicable to all of us rather than going through the phase that might have, whatever particular age you think you are right now. Because then I would only be talking to a little bit of you or a little bit of here, and I don't even know much about some of those phases anyway. So we all have the experiences to some degree where we have good times and we have not so good times. Good times, good marks at school, a good friendship, a job that's going well, getting married, having babies, proud parents, retirement, church growth, spiritual development. All of those are wonderful times, and we can feel, we're at that top. Then we have the times that somehow are not so enjoyable. Maybe at school you're bullied, maybe you're lonely, experience failure at school, at work, or whatever. Breakups happen. Sometimes relationships don't last. And then there's illness that comes along, and poverty, sometimes loss of employment, sometimes rejection by someone close or someone who just fails us. You know, these sort of things happen. So I was thinking about talking about what does it mean to about being a Christian through these phases of life? What should be characteristic of a Christian going through both the upper phases and the downside of life? How should we act? How should we behave? What should the Christian look like during the good times, and what should the Christian look like during the bad times? So that would be the where I'm going with this, the Christian through the phases of life. Well, here we are back on one of our bicycle trips again. And we have it's become kind of a standard saying, it doesn't get any better than this. And, you know, that's the day when the sun's shining, the wind's behind you, and it's all downhill. It just doesn't get any better than this. And we say this now in jest sometimes, you know, when we're going through really bad time. It doesn't get any better than this. But we started doing this, and it's come up over and over again when Vicki and I are traveling around. We always have to fit it in somewhere in the trip. But you can think of some times when it doesn't get any better than this. Think about the picture-perfect Christmas that's coming up. You're going to have the family all together. You're going to have a beautiful tree, a warm fireplace, decorated all up. You're going to have children's laughter as they open the multitude of presents under the tree. And you're going to have food and friendship and fellowship and health and happiness for everyone. What a picture-perfect, doesn't get any better than this sort of ideal Christmas sign. But we know that that's not always going to be the case, is it? But that's the, sort of the idea that it doesn't get any better than this. So what should a Christian's attitude and actions be like during those times in life? I'm starting out with that. Here's a group of people that are waiting for a clinic in Ecuador to be seen by physicians there. They don't always have it so good, but this is reminding me that we have an opportunity to share with people when we're having the good times in our life. We can take what we have and share it with others. And I was trying to think of a biblical example of when people are going through good times and what the scriptures had to say to someone who was going through good times. It's not that easy to think of it because the scriptures tend to be aimed at people who are having tough times. But I just thought maybe for your consideration you would like to think about Gaius. He was the man that John wrote to in 3 John. And I'm going to read a few verses out of 3 John, the third letter of John, to Gaius, the person he was writing to. The elder, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in truth. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness to the truth and how you continue to walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you are doing for the brothers, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. So here's nothing negative about Gaius's life. Things seem to be really going well. And look at what John tells him to enjoy while he's, and to do while he's having this good experience when he's on the, it never gets any better than this. He tells him to continue to, or and praises him for his faithfulness to the truth and his walk in the truth. So, part of what we need to do when we're experiencing the good time is just to really focus on the truth and be faithful to it. And what is the truth? Well, Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. So our good times need to focus on Him. We need to be faithful in Him, testifying to His death and life and resurrection. In other words, the gospel, just faithfully testifying to that. And we need to live in the reality of these of the events and Christ's gospel. We need to be committed to living for Jesus and with Jesus. We need to be followers of Christ. We also, John tells Gaius, that we need to express our love for others as Jesus commanded us. So we need to continue to love one another as He loved us. So we have this opportunity to share with those in need, like we have an opportunity to share with people in Ecuador. When we go, we have multiple blessings from the Lord, which we can share with people who have less. And that's one thing we need to remind ourselves to do when we are experiencing the good times. Paul writes to the Ephesian church in Ephesians 5:20, he said, always giving thanks to God for everything. And that should be another hallmark of the good times, is that we have an attitude of gratitude, thankfulness to God. We are not the makers of our success or our good times. They are a blessing from God, and every good gift comes from above, in James 1:17. So those are the things that we should be reminded of when nothing gets better than this times in our life, that we still have a responsibility. So what are the dangers of those good times? And in North America, in our situation, I think we're especially in danger of that, because we've experienced, as we know, so much of the good times of life. Well, there's a parable in Luke that Jesus tells about a successful farmer who had the good times of life. In Luke 12:15, Jesus said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them this parable. "The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, 'What should I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself, but is not rich towards God.'" So the danger that we have is that we think these things are our things. We think that we've somehow managed to make them happen, and that they're ours to possess and to use as we will. But they are not ours. They weren't ours to start with. God has blessed them with us, blessed us with them, and they should be used for Him. We kind of become self-centered. In other words, we forget about the giver, and we think about the gifts and the things that we have. Pride and self-sufficiency and self-centeredness are the warnings for us when we're experiencing the good times. The temptation is to trust in ourselves and not to trust in the Lord when times are good. We forget what truly makes us rich. John wrote to the church in Laodicea in Revelation 3:17. He says, "You say, 'I am rich, I have acquired wealth and do not need a thing,' but you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked." He says to them, and this is written to a church, not to an unbeliever, "Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him, and he with me." So people experiencing wealth and good times may be spiritually wretched and poor, and they don't even recognize it. And Jesus is there, wanting to have fellowship with them. And so that's the key that they're missing, was the relationship with Christ. They have all that they need physically, but they don't have that communion with Christ. He's outside, and He wants to be eating and dining with them. It wasn't that their riches were bad. It was that they had left Christ outside of their life, outside on the doorstep, knocking, waiting to come and join them in their fellowship. So those are some of the warnings for people who have it good, and that's most of us at most of the times, I think. But what about dry times? What about times when things aren't so good? When things go wrong, what should a Christian look like? What should a Christian be doing when the enemy is active against him? As we read in Afghanistan this morning about the family who is really suffering and the people there are really suffering. I read this little blog on the internet of a person, don't know this person at all, but it was entitled, "I Have Lost My Faith in God. Finally giving up on faith, what can I say? I have prayed to God day in and day out my entire life. I had a hard childhood, had to marry when I was 16, and now I am 32, and I can't remember a day in my life where I have not struggled. Things have only gotten worse with time. My husband just got laid off. We have 4 kids, and I don't know how we are going to make it from day to day anymore. I have serious medical issues, and praying never seems to help with anything. My husband is a hard worker and does everything asked of him, and his reward is getting laid off. I don't know where to turn or even want to start over again for the 100th time. I just don't understand. It seems if you are a good person and you do what is asked of you and more, you get dumped on. But the people out there doing wrong get everything handed to them. How many more years of begging and praying to God would it take for us just to catch a small break? Honestly, any more, I think I could continue to follow the right path and pray until I was blue in the face, and it still would never have made a difference. Very, very sad commentary. This complaint sounds a lot like the children of Israel in the wilderness. In Exodus 16:1-3, it says, Then they left Elim and journeyed into the Sin Desert between Elim and Mount Sinai. They arrived there a month after leaving Egypt. There, too, the whole community of Israel spoke bitterly against Moses and Aaron. Oh, that we were back in Egypt, they moaned. It would have been better if the Lord had killed us there. At least there we had plenty to eat. But now you have brought us into this desert to starve us to death. These are the bitter cries of people who are going through tough times, right? They are despondent and despairing. What's going wrong with this picture? These are the people who think that it's all about them, really. I mean, I don't have what I need. I want more. I am hurting. Please help me. And sure, these are all important things, but the focus is self again. Just like the Christian who has it all and is focused on himself, so the person who has a hard time can get focused on themselves. Where really the focus for the Christian going through the phases of life is to be focused on the Lord. Does it sound familiar? Have you ever heard yourself speaking? Sounds like these things that I've just read. I can relate to it. I mean, I've had the times when I've had my doubts and circumstances are such that things are tough. Nothing like Afghanistan tough like we just read. But, you know, enough to make you think, well, this is not easy enough. I don't know. What's the point of all this? I'm kind of a failure. I'm disappointed in myself. And myself says that things aren't perfect. I should just dump it. And these times can, even though they seem kind of trivial from the outside, intensely inside, it's hard to tell what someone's feeling, but they can shake the foundations of your life when you have these moments. I'm sure you could find many similar stories among all of us. And some have given up. We have seen that. We've seen them given up. Life has many downs. Some are relatively minor. You know, you get a bad test result, you miss the bus, you have to work on Christmas Day or something like that. But others are really life-shattering events. You know, you've had suffered violent attacks, spiritually troubled, spousal unfaithfulness, cancer, loss of a spouse, loss of a child, loss of a best friend. All of these things are really earth-shattering events, or life-changing. How do you live as a Christian through those things? How does it affect the Christian? If we focus on ourselves, we will become a bitter person. Life will seem unfair, and God will seem unjust, uncaring, or just impotent, unable to do anything. There is another point of view, though. Here's a picture of Ruth Graham, Billy Graham's one of his daughters. And as she went through life as a young girl, she knew the Lord. She gave her heart to Jesus when she was 7, made commitments at age 11, lived a good Christian life. She says, I went to college, married, had children. And all of this was, you know, she was living the up phase. But in the 1990s, her world fell apart when her husband was unfaithful. After 18 years of marriage, Ruth was devastated. They went through months of counseling before admitting defeat. Then just a few months after the divorce, she remarried on the rebound, but knew within a day that she'd just made a terrible mistake. She thought, what are they going to... Her life in shambles, she loaded up everything and sought refuge with her parents. She thought, what are they going to say to me? As she rounded the corner to the last bend in Billy Graham's driveway, she says, Daddy was there waiting for me. He wrapped his arms around me and said, welcome home. So we have another point of view. When things are falling apart, there is someone waiting for us who wants to love us and wants to have a relationship with us. They're knocking at the door, asking to come in. What followed was a time of turmoil, and around age 40, she was in personal, emotional, and spiritual crisis. I sort of went off the rail, she admits. I decided I was tired of doing it God's way, but that just made things worse. I had thought I was doing everything perfectly. I was a good wife. I was a wonderful mother. I was active in the church. I was teaching Bible studies. So why didn't God take care of me? Again, that was the thought that she had. Her children were suffering too. One daughter developed eating disorder. Another son entered drug abuse program. Another daughter gave birth to twins and she wasn't married. So all of these struggles she was going on. How did she get through it? She felt abandoned. It was really a crisis of faith. How come the Lord didn't intervene? Why didn't God protect her, keep her from having to go through the fire? Like, there's the questions again we were asking. Why not? Why me? Why does it happen to me? What is going wrong for me? But then she realized it's all okay. It's part of God's plan. I didn't like to have to go through it. None of us do. But it was very important for me to have that experience and to grow through it. The story is not over, but that's okay. God gives me grace. And God is a covenant-keeping God. He is faithful when I am not. Now I am living life. He is faithful even when I am not. Now I am living life. I am just living in the grace of God. The fellowship of God, of the Lord, is what's sustaining her at this time. So she saw God at work. She focused on Him, took the focus off herself, and arrived at a place where life meant more and something to her again. For a biblical example of this, we can look at Paul's life. He went through a lot. In 2 Corinthians 5, he lists a whole lot of things that he's experienced. And we'll see what his response to all these troubles were. 2 Corinthians 5:5, we have been beaten, put in jail, faced angry mobs, worked to exhaustion, endured sleepless nights, and gone without food. We have proved ourselves by our purity, our understanding, our patience, our kindness, our sincere love, and the power of the Holy Spirit. We have faithfully preached the truth. God's power has been working in us. We have righteousness as our weapons, both to attack and defend ourselves. We serve God whether people honor us or despise us, whether they slander or praise us. We are honest, but they call us imposters. We are well known, but we are treated as unknown. We live close to death, but here we are, still alive. We have been beaten within an inch of our lives. Our hearts ache, but we always have joy. We are poor, but we give spiritual riches to others. We own nothing, yet we have everything. He goes on to say in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians, verse 23, I have worked harder, been put in jail more often, been whipped times without number, and faced death again and again. 5 different times the Jews gave me 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. Once I spent a whole night and day adrift at sea. I traveled many weary miles. I have faced danger from flooded rivers and from robbers. I have faced danger from my own people, the Jews, as well as from the Gentiles. I have faced danger in the cities, in the deserts, and on the stormy seas. I have faced danger from men who claim to be Christians but are not. I have lived with weariness and pain and sleepless nights. I have often been hungry and thirsty and have gone without food. Often I have shivered with cold, without enough clothing to keep warm. Then besides all this, I have the daily burden of how the churches are getting along. But then he recalls this, my gracious favor is all you need, as he hears a word from the Lord. My power works best in your weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may work through me, since I know it is all for Christ's good. I am quite content with my weakness and with insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. My power works best in your weakness, and so the power of Christ may work through you. When Paul talks about that, we kind of picture some sort of, I don't know, I do anyway, some sort of miraculous super Paul that, you know, is powerful because Christ is in him. But no, he says that he's just there as this weak, beat up guy who's the transmission of God's grace from Christ to others. And it's only because he stays plugged in to Christ that he's able to do all this. If he was not plugged into Christ, then all of these hardships, like he's been through more than any of us, I think, you know, they would have all melted him down. They would have just destroyed him. They would destroy anybody. But when plugged into Christ, he stays alive and experiences life because Christ he's connected to Christ. He says in Philippians, I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or empty, whether plenty or little. So on the phases of life, he knows how to live. For I can do everything with the help of Christ who gives me the strength I need. It's the connection with Christ through the phases of life that should be the hallmark of the Christian. Connected when things are terrible, connected when things are good. But that connection is the important part, whether you're up or whether you're down. I'd like to introduce you to William Stuntz. Probably, I hadn't heard of him. I was looking up his life a bit on the internet. He's a kind of an interesting character who passed away in 2011. And he's kind of unique because he's a lawyer and an evangelical Christian. But more than that, he was a... Sorry, lawyers. He was a Harvard Law professor, of all things. And you don't find too many evangelical Christians in the Harvard Law professorship, I think. I don't know. I'm not sure, but that would be my impression. He had life really good. Like, you know, things were going really well. Had this career going. And then things sort of fell apart for him, too, a little bit like the story we had of Ruth Graham. This was an article written on his life. Well, no, written by him before he passed away in 2009 in Christianity Today. So about 9 years, he wrote this in 2009, about the year 2000, he was changing his car's tire and his back just started flamed with pain and went down his leg. No medications, and he had surgery. Nothing could relieve that pain. It was just unremittent, constant pain. And I don't know how anybody can live. I had pain for a few days like that. I couldn't imagine going on and on and on for years without any relief from that. That would just tear you apart. But then things got worse than that for him. One of his children... He had three children. One of them got seriously ill with a life-threatening illness. His marriage started to fall apart. I can imagine that, living with a spouse with chronic back pain, that you would not feel too happy about that. And then, of all things, he had colon cancer. And then he became diagnosed with metastatic colon cancer. And at the point of writing his article in 2009, the physicians estimated he would have about 2 years of life left. And they, for once, were right, because he died in 2011. But he was suffering really bad, from going from the high point in life to a very low point in life. And he writes an article, and I would recommend you could read it. I can't read the whole thing, but he says there were three gifts that he recognized that God was giving him in his suffering. One, that God uses the downtimes for his own purposes. And he makes the point that these downtimes didn't come because he deserved them. Everybody deserves the worst that we can possibly get. But they just come because that's God's plan or God's whatever, purposes. So some people get these awful times, and others don't. And some people who really deserve them don't get them, and other people who don't deserve them really get them. So it's not a matter of that. But he says that God uses the down to go up. In other words, like Joseph's life when he was in Egypt, he had a really down time. But God took that and almost turned the evil intent and turned it back on itself and made the evil something that turned out to be good. And so he says that's at work, and that's the pattern. For Christ, for example, the worst day ever on the earth was the day that Jesus died. The best day on earth ever was the day that Jesus died. You know, it's that the evil at its worst, God made the evil work against itself almost. And that's what can happen when we're down. Suffering alone has some dignity because, you know, like the clothes, the fashions are put on people who have, the movie stars wear an outlandish outfit. Well, everybody then wants to wear an outlandish outfit, even though it looks horrible, right? But Jesus wore the garment of suffering. So he's given dignity to that garment. So when we suffer, we can think of the Lord who suffered as well. And there's dignity even in that Jesus wore the suffering. And then his main point was that even in our down times, God remembers us. And his comforting verse, and he wrote about it quite in this article, and interestingly enough, when the New York Times wrote about his death in 2011, they actually put in their article about this man his verse of comfort. And his verse of comfort is Job 14, verse 15 and 16, where Job says, "You will call, and I will answer you." This is speaking about God. "You will long for the creatures your hands have made. Surely then you will count my steps, but not keep track of my sins." And I thought, well, that's an interesting verse, but what does it say? But he says, the idea that God longs for us was sustaining to him. That even though things were down, God longs to have that relationship with us. And he's pursuing us. He's pursuing us as a lover pursues anyone, their lover. He loves us even when we're down, and he wants us for himself, and he longs for us. And that sustained Mr. Stuntz in his time of trouble. He says, "Philosophers and scientists and law professors, my line of work, are not in the best position to understand the Christian story. Musicians and painters and writers of fiction are much better situated, because the Christian story is a story, not a theory or an argument, and definitely not a moral or legal code. Our faith is, to use C.S. Lewis's apt words, the myth that became fact. Our faith is a painting so captivating that you cannot take your eyes off it. Our faith is a love song so achingly beautiful that you weep each time you hear it. At the center of that truth, of that true myth, that painting, that song, stands a God who does vastly more than remember his image in us. He pursues us as lovers pursue one another. It sounds too good to be true, yet it is true. So I have found in the midst of pain and heartache and cancer." And I think, you know, the man who can write that when he's dying of cancer at the low point of his life, he's understood that it's important, that it's the connection with Christ that's all important. It's the Christian needs to cling to Jesus whatever his phase of life. And so we need to keep our eyes fixed on him, as the writer to Hebrews says. He is our companion through the ups, through the downs, and he's not our ticket out of those situations. He's not our way to avoid those situations. He's just there with us. So here we are cycling again through the deserts in Israel. It was a neat ride that day, but it was hilly again, and we're just going to go up the hill. We have little ways of trying to get through those uphill battles. And one is that Vicky likes me to tell her that she's going to make it. So I can say, "You're going to get there. You're doing great. You're doing great." And secretly, I'm awed by her keeping pumping up yet. So I have to keep up too, because otherwise it would look bad. And if we have to stop, it's nice to stop together. Sometimes I don't. I just try to cycle past to show off. But better if I stopped and spent time with her. This is sort of the picture that companionship of Christ has, that he is there encouraging us. You can make it. You can do it. You can go through it. And if you have to take a stop, I'm going to stop there with you. And I'm going to be there with you, whether it's tough or whether it's good downhill cycling. We're going to be together. And, you know, that's a really enjoyable part of it. So the touring is great. You could do that on your own. You would enjoy it, but it's better to share it with somebody, really. The good times are best shared, and the bad times are certainly, we require someone to be beside us. So we have the Lord who is beside us, and that shared experience, that shared companionship is what is important. A metaphor that's meant a lot to me of late is this, the vine and the branches metaphor. Jesus says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts every branch that doesn't produce fruit and he prunes the branches that do bear fruit so that they will even produce more. Yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them, they will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. I have told you this so that you will be filled with my joy. Yes, your joy will overflow. I command you to love each other in the same way that I love you. And here is how to measure it. The greatest love is shown when people lay down their lives for their friends. You are my friends if you obey me. I no longer call you servants because a master doesn't confide in his servants. Now you are my friends since I have told you everything the Father told me. I think the key point for the Christian through the phases of life is to maintain that connection to the vine, to connect to Christ. When times are good, we can experience the joy of his presence. And when the times are bad, we can experience his comfort. From the branch point of view, pruning looks pretty bad. You know, ouch, that hurt. Why did you do that? I like those leaves. Why me? Why not that branch? What did I do to deserve that? Why didn't you, go prune somewhere else? But that's the branch's perspective. If you're connected to the vine, you realize that the gardener is the Father. The vine is giving us the life to sustain us, to make us more fruitful. And so times of pruning are promised, actually, not just optional. They are coming if we want to be fruitful. A lot of the times I'm involved in, in some pruning activities among people. I see a lot of pruning going on. Those are not good times, but when people come for their operations, a lot of them will like to say to the nurses, especially, not so much to me, but can you hold my hand while they're putting me to sleep? It doesn't happen every time, but it's fairly common. So what's the connection there? It's not that it's not going to make them less pruned. It's going to be that there's a connection with someone that's going through it with them, right? The holding of hands is the important thing. We need to hold on to Jesus. He loves us and he calls us his friends. We need to draw strength, his power, his grace, and his life from him. Let's just close in prayer at this time. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we have you with us at all times. We pray that we might recognize that our lives need to be focused on him, the one who is our friend, and he is the one who we can come to at any time to share these moments, knowing that he cares about us. And let us fix our eyes on him who goes through all these experiences with us. Let us not be focused on ourselves, and let us try to remember that when you have blessed us, we need to help those who are in need as well. Let us remember that when we are in tough times, that there is one who cares about us. And let us all help each other as we share life's phases together. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.